Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Back in 2004, the Ukrainian presidential election took a shocking twist when the leading pro-Western candidate was poisoned with dioxin. Viktor Yushchenko survived, and after that highly contentious election and months of peaceful protest by pro-democracy campaigners, he was elected president in what was dubbed Ukraine's Orange Revolution. Well, today, Viktor Yushchenko and his wife Katerina are in Dublin to speak at the Interaction Summit for former heads of state, and Katerina Yushchenko is with me now in the studio. It's so lovely to have you here. Thank you for taking the time. And how's Viktor?
He's fine. I think, like all Ukrainians, we have to keep very busy in informing the world about what's happening and really winning the war.
21 years on, though, and I was looking back at some of the footage from that time, and people will remember the pictures. They were so shocking when he re-emerged after his treatment in Austria, wasn't it, after the poisoning. He was so seriously ill, wasn't he?
Indeed. You know, they meant to kill him, and it really was a terrorist act, and it was one of the first acts of, you could say, Russian aggression against Ukraine, because they wanted to get rid of a pro-European, pro-Western candidate. And he was supposed to die. He did survive, thanks, I think, to Western medicine and the prayers, I believe, of millions of people. But in his first 2 months in office, he had 26 surgeries. So it was very, very physically difficult, but he was determined. And we knew that if he didn't continue on, there was a chance that Ukraine would fall into the precipice and become like Belarus, just a part of Russia. And so we had to continue to fight. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it was the first act of war, you could say, of Russia against Ukraine. Putin's act of war. Because obviously Ukraine has been fighting a war with Russia for 350 years.
Now, at that time, you were looking at a deeply divided country. I mean, you had the northwestern half of Ukraine looking west, the rest of it, the southeastern half, looking to Moscow. Has that dramatically changed in the intervening period, in your view?
Yes. I would say, first, keep in mind that that division was an artificial one that was very intentionally created by Russia, by deporting Ukrainians, by bringing in Russians in, by massive propaganda. And they were doing everything they could divide the country by language, by religion, by views of history. So it was a very intentional division of the country. And I would say that the only silver lining of this horrific war that has taken the lives of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, that has tortured, raped, murdered, the only silver lining is that our people who have been fighting against Russia for 350 years have become more united than ever in our entire history. Mm-hmm. Whether you are talking about people inside the country or people who have been forced to leave but are now active outside, everyone has a single will, and that's to win this war. 24 wars we have fought against Russia, and we've decided that this will be the final one, because we do not want our children, our grandchildren, to have to fight it like our grandparents did.
Well, Katerina, as we speak, I see black smoke emerging from the Sistine Chapel, which tells me that there has been a vote in the conclave, but it has been inconclusive, and we'll have more on that later on in the programme. Things have changed, though, dramatically in the last couple of months, really since Donald Trump has entered the White House. And I don't need to tell you about that very public meeting that he had with your president, Zelensky. Are you very worried about what might happen next in that regard when it comes to military support from the United States?
Of course. Ukraine has always been felt that the United States was its greatest ally, along with Europe, and it counted on that kind of support. Ukrainians have always been for the same values that the Americans stand for, of democracy and freedom. And so what we fear now is that there is an administration in power now that thinks that the whole war is about territory. But it's not a war about territory. For us, it's a war that is existential. We understand that even if we give up territory, any concessions will not bring peace. It's a dangerous illusion to think that they will bring peace.
Mm-hmm. So when we hear, you might have to concede Crimea, you do not accept that that is going to solve anything or lead you to a peace?
First of all, we understand that that goes against all international laws. And what we do have standing behind us now is that we have always followed international law. And international law has recognized that all of those territories are Ukraine. Russia has recognized in 1991, in the Budapest Memorandum of 94, in a big agreement in 97, that those territories are Ukraine. Putin said many times that those territories are Ukraine. So first, if we give them up, we are going against international law. Second, we know that dictators are never satisfied by concessions. If you allow crime to happen, it will bring on more crime. And so we know that this will be just an opportunity for him to rearm and to fight us again. Because his goal is to first to restore his empire and to wipe out Ukraine as a nation and as a democracy. Because he's very afraid that if his own people wanted democracy and freedom, he would be out of power. He and his kleptocratic regime would be out of power immediately.
Were you surprised in 2022 when he invaded in the way that he did? We remember in the weeks leading up to that, the Americans had information where they suspected it was going to happen, but it seemed to take the rest of the world by surprise.
I have to say that we did not think that Putin would be so reckless and stupid. Because we, unlike the world, did not understood that their army was not as strong as they believed. It's the second biggest army in the world. And now it turns out it's the second biggest army in Ukraine, because we have learned that they came unprepared. They never expected. They thought they would win in 3 days. Instead, we have been facing them now for 11 years, if you think from the first time they invaded, and 3 years since now.
So Crimea 2014.
Exactly. And we are fighting against not only one nuclear power, but now we're fighting against two nuclear powers because North Korea has become involved. Mm-hmm. And yet we are winning in many ways. It took them a year to gain 8 miles of territory in the area of Chasivyar. Their armies are depleted. Their economy is a mess. And all they can count on now is support from America to give them a respite so that they can attack us again.
Yeah, and yet they keep going. And this is a grinding war, and it is grinding the Ukrainian people and your army as well. I mean, I know what you're saying, that you will not give up, but this is extremely difficult. Faced with an uncertain view of what the support is going to be like from the United States, where does it go?
Do you know, no one wants peace more than we do. No one wants peace more than our president and our people. But we do not want, and we will not be destroyed by the peace terms. Our back is against a wall. You know, if you can say that if it's a choice between life and death, we choose life. And so we have to continue fighting. And they can say we can stop, but we understand for us, as I mentioned, it's not territory, it's the people. We have seen what happens in those territories that the Russians occupy. It is death. It is destruction. It is the loss of identity. It is stealing hundreds of thousands of our children. It is re-education. It is making us Russian and a military. They want to take us for military uses that they will then attack Europe.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the rare earth, the minerals deal that Ukraine has struck with the United States?
We are very hopeful that that business interests in the U.S. will find we'll be able to invest in Ukraine, and that will bring to some protection of Ukraine. But we see that as something that's very long term and not something that helps us now. What will help us now is if the assets of the Russians are confiscated and given us for military use right now. We could have won this war in the first year if we had had the equipment, but we were not given the equipment. And we feel very strongly now that if we are given the equipment, we will win, because Russia is very weak economically, and we just have the determination to win. The way Vietnam won, the way Afghanistan won, we will win because of our determination.
Donald Trump is so unpredictable. And if he does decide to pull military support, I mean, it would seem now that the EU just doesn't have the capability to replace what America gives you.
You know, we're very much hoping for unity in Europe. You know, we stood up, people died for European values in Ukraine in 2014. They're dying for European values now. I think there's going to be a rejuvenation of Europe that will come from the Eastern countries, including Ukraine, but also all our close neighbors who understand the threat that Russia poses now. We spoke with a young man 2 days ago who lost limbs in the war, and he said, I can now go to the West, but I will stay in Ukraine and fight. Why? Because I know if I go to Germany or France or England or Ireland, the war will follow me there. And so it's important for me to fight in Ukraine and win now so it does not go further.
Now, Katerina, you're here to attend this Interaction Council annual plenary meeting that is on in Dublin this week. How important are those types of meetings for you and for Ukraine?
I think extremely important. You know, this organization was formed 42 years ago to bring together leaders. You know, in democracies, leaders stay for 4 years, maybe 10 years, and no longer. And yet they have expertise and experience that could be used by future leaders, and they can provide policy advice. And for us, it has been interesting to be able to communicate our point of view to people in continents we may not always see, in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia. And we can discuss, we can have dialogue with them and discuss these issues. For example, we talked about Ukraine yesterday. We also talked about Gaza yesterday. And we had somebody from Jordan and somebody from Egypt talking about a potential peace plan for Gaza. We talked to them about Ukraine and what maybe their misconceptions were about our war. And so I think this is very important to have that dialogue.
Katerina, you're very welcome to Ireland and to Dublin. And thank you for coming in to see us. Katerina Yushchenko.